And where's the liver coming from, Dr. Gerber?
So I'm going to add one more comment to Dr. Hayashi. So the patient always asks, well, where am I on the list? And this leads to your question of where does the liver come from? The list, essentially, each center has a list of their patients, but the list that patients are always asking about is a virtual list that gets generated when there's a deceased donor. Currently, livers are allocated in a model that takes out the most sick patients. So as Dr. Hayashi pointed out, those high MELDs, 36 up to 40, or people in fulminant liver failure, and it allocates those livers into one of 11 regions that go across the United States. So in North Carolina, we're in Region 11. We share that region with South Carolina, Tennessee, Virginia, Kentucky, I believe. Yeah, that's it. There's a little snippet of West Virginia that bleeds into our region, but that's our region. So if you had a MELD or your loved one had a MELD of 40 and there was a donor anywhere in that region, you would likely be the first person on the list, assuming there isn't somebody else with a higher MELD score. If there's nobody that's that sick, then the livers currently are allocated in what's referred to as a local model. And that's in North Carolina, there are two local districts. We're in one that covers sort of from essentially Winston-Salem, draw a line south and goes all the way to the Atlantic Ocean. And then there's another local area that would be on the west side of that line.
As a patient then, don't you want to be listed in multiple spots to increase your chance of getting a liver without ending up being extremely sick?
Sure. So that's a great question and a conversation that we have with patients. And maybe I'll let Dr. Hayashi carry that forward.
Sure. And you're right. And you just have to kind of understand what David said about where these local regions are. You obviously don't want to be listed in the same local region. That doesn't do you much good. But if you want multiple listings and patients do ask about this, if they have the ability to get to another center that's outside of our local region, sure, we often will let them know that they can do that, and we often do recommend it.
So what do you do with these folks who are not super sick, who have substantial liver disease, who are symptomatic from their liver disease, who have swelling in their abdomen, who have swelling in their lungs, who are a little bit yellow, but whose MELD score is 18, 19, 20, not high enough to get in an organ in one area, but the person really, quality of life is not what they want. Would that person benefit from being listed in all sorts of places?
Sure, and obviously that brings up a lot of other issues, you know, socioeconomic. How capable are they to get to regions afar? There's going to be out-of-pocket costs, obviously travel expenses and things like that. The other thing that, you know, I talk to all my patients about, especially this group you're talking about, is we talk about the kind of organ they are willing to consider. I like to say getting a liver, it's not really a new liver. It's almost like getting a used car in a way, right? It's been used by someone else. And so just like when you go to a used car lot, there are a variety of used cars. And just like this liver, there are a variety of qualities to those organs. So these organs, some of them may have what I like to say just some little issue with them, but they are fine organs, but they would be called an expanded criteria donor liver.
So how do you decide? You have a patient sitting there, they need a liver. How do you decide whether that liver really is a good liver?
So what we try to do is, first off, anticipate the needs of the patient, as Skip just said. Those patients who are sicker and maybe their MELD score isn't capturing it, we want to make sure that we've looked at every liver potential for them. Going back to your question, how do we know if that's a good liver? It's a little crystal ball-like, you know, because as Skip points out, every liver is used to some degree, and there are many variables of how the liver will function. We look at what the donor has gone through prior to brain death, if it's a brain dead donor, and make an assessment based on what we know, how that donor matches up with historical donors around the country. And there's a series of metrics that we can use. Again, they're never perfect, but they can get you into a sort of a ballpark category.
So some centers do living liver transplants. Others don't.
Correct.
How does a living liver transplant work?
So in that case, as with any major surgery, so the living donor, you have to have a program established with expertise and focus in living liver donation. It's a technically challenging operation, but for people with expertise in liver surgery, it's doable. There are risks involved to the donor, much as there are in, say, living kidney donation. In living kidney donation, we talk about the severe, the major risks at being roughly 1 in 1,000. And that includes death, includes major complications. In the liver field, the current number is closer to 1 in 300 to 1 in 400. So it's obviously a more palpable number. Centers that do living liver donation or living liver transplants typically are looking at the balance between their deceased donor pool and the needs of their patients. There is sort of this balance that you want to achieve because you want to do enough of them per year to make sure, you know, to keep the machine efficient and optimized. It helps give the patients the greatest benefit. So there are some regions of the country that have put in more effort into that, have very active programs. The other area where living liver donation comes into play is when you're looking at a very small recipient. So that's the case of pediatrics, a child. And that's where living liver donor transplant started. If you look at an infant, you know, 2 years old, 3 years old, or younger, they can oftentimes match up suitably from a volume standpoint with 1/3 or 1/4 of an adult's liver. And when you look at the liver, it's not a rectangular box. It's actually segmented. So we can remove two of those segments intact and together and use that as the graft for the pediatric recipient. And that meets a need that is truly unmet in the deceased donor pool because there are very few pediatric deceased donors. So when you look at living liver transplant, the ratio is, you know, it's weighted significantly towards pediatric recipients, typically from a parent.
Sure, because if you're a parent and you have a sick child giving...
No question.
No question, yeah.